So, yeah, we're really excited to have in the studio Ted Howard of the Democracy Collaborative. He's the executive director, I believe, and chairperson. And so Ted is in town, as I understand, to fulfill a contract with the New Orleans Business Alliance that had the great sense to bring such a good organization to New Orleans, because the Democracy Collaborative are very interested in community wealth building and in narrowing wealth gaps and creating equity where there's no equity. And so I'd like to welcome you, Ted. Thank you for coming in today. I know you're a busy guy.
Thank you very much, Janet.
Really, really appreciate your time. So can you just maybe let our listeners know a little bit about what the Democracy Collaborative is and what inspired you to create the organization?
Sure. Thank you very much. Well, the Democracy Collaborative, we were founded 15 years ago. We're a nonprofit organization. We focus on research and advocacy and policy work. And really the concern that motivates us is actually a couple concerns. One, growing wealth inequality in the country. I'm sure everybody knows the statistics, but one of the most mind-blowing to me is that just 400 people in the United States today own more wealth than the bottom 185 million of us. And I think that as a democratic question, a small d democratic, not democratic party, but as a question for the future of our democracy, this is a great challenge to all of us right now. There's also great inequality across race in our country. The average white family owns 18 times the assets of the average African American family, which very interestingly is even greater gap than there was in apartheid South Africa, when there was a whole structure designed to create that situation. So one of the things that motivates us is how do we start to address the wealth inequality in this country to ensure that our democracy thrives? The second question is, you know, we all live in community, but our communities have been destabilized all over the country. Our jobs are moving around. The capital is mobile. I live in Cleveland, Ohio. 40% of the population lives below the poverty line. You have similar kinds of demographics here in New Orleans. It's very destabilizing. So how do we root capital in place and stabilize a local economy? And the truth is that there are just different kinds of forms of business enterprise that are more stabilizing than others, including cooperatives. And so it's those kinds of questions we're looking at here in New Orleans with the New Orleans Business Alliance.
Great, and I'm glad you mentioned cooperatives. That's actually how I came to know about the Democracy Collaborative. Was I went to a conference in Mississippi earlier this year called Jackson Rising, and they were specifically trying to figure out how to create infrastructure in Jackson that would, you know, they could get some investment money to sort of nurture cooperatives into being, and they had a really great opportunity under Mayor Shokwe Lumumba to get that started, and unfortunately he passed away, and they now have a new mayor. I know they're still going strong and still very committed to the project of providing opportunities for people that are maybe under-resourced to be able to own their own businesses collectively. And I think in New Orleans, I'm in the criminal justice. I work on criminal justice issues. And when people are released from prison with all kinds of strikes against them and don't have the opportunity to get into sort of more traditional workforce opportunities, I was trying to figure out ways that they can enter into sort of middle-class income, wealth, or upper middle, or upper, you know, the upper class of wealth earning opportunities, and to sort of keep them from recidivating. And that's how that's when I learned about cooperatives. So I met one of your colleagues up there, and then I know it was not long after that that the New Orleans Business Alliance hired your organization to come to New Orleans. And can you talk a little bit about the Evergreen project in Cleveland? Because I know the New Orleans Business Alliance are very interested in developing the bio district here. Yeah. And so they kept referencing the Evergreen, Cleveland Evergreen Cooperatives, as something to model New Orleans after in terms of building biodistrict. So what does that mean exactly?
Well, there's been an explosion of interest in the last couple of years in the United States around this broad concept of employee-owned firms. Now, there are many different ways to organize companies so that the people who work in them actually have a stake in the company. In other words, they're not just employees, but that they're owners as well. One of those forms is a worker cooperative, where the company, rather than employees, has members. And the members are the joint owners of the enterprise, so that as the company is successful and is turning a profit, hopefully it will, they're not only earning a family-supporting living wage and they're not only getting benefits, but the profits are shared over time so that the labor you contribute to make the company successful is rewarded not only with the salary, but with a share of the profits. And that's really, in many ways, what a worker cooperative is. And they tend to be more democratic forms of enterprise because everybody has one share and one vote in the company and so forth. One of the models that has captured a lot of attention around the country in the last few years is the Evergreen Cooperatives in Cleveland, Ohio. And I was, fortunate to have been one of the designers of the Evergreen Cooperatives. It's a very large team, so I don't mean to take credit, but they're a big group of us putting this together. Today we have three companies in the city. We have about 120, 130 people employed through these companies. The companies are located in very low-income neighborhoods in the city. The people that we've hired are from those neighborhoods, so it's very place-based sort of economic development strategy. And the companies are sustained, not solely, but in large measure with contracts by large, what are called anchor institutions, hospitals, universities, and so forth. So this design of creating new community-based businesses, intentionally targeting the hiring to people who've really been disadvantaged in our system, often people with barriers to employment, which may mean low educational attainment or may mean they're returning citizens or ex-offenders who are coming back to the community, and then linking these companies to the supply chain, the purchasing of the large institutions is a kind of model that we pioneered in Cleveland. And a number of cities around the country are looking at that model and how might we do something similar. One of those is New Orleans. But I should say the work we're doing with the New Orleans Business Alliance is may result in some new worker-owned companies, but also we're just simply trying to reinforce and strengthen the network of what are called disadvantaged business enterprises here, often minority-owned firms or women-owned firms, small companies rooted in the community who need an opportunity to get into the purchasing and supply chains of these large institutions. So we've been interviewing about 35 or 40 local, small DBE kinds of businesses and also anchor institutions to understand what are they buying that could be bought locally rather than have these billions of dollars literally leaving New Orleans to buy things from Chicago or Los Angeles or wherever. And as a result, they don't have an impact on the city itself.
Well, that's it's fabulous that, as I said before, that the city had the good sense to bring the Democracy Collaborative here to help bridge that disconnect between anchor institutions and the traditionally, disenfranchised population.
Well, I think there's something, I live in Cleveland. I've worked all over the country, and every community is special. I think something very special is being developed here. I've been impressed that the mayor of the city, Mayor Landrieu, has developed a new economic development strategy. It is intentionally looking at the challenge the city faces, that 52% of African-American males in Orleans Parish are outside of the formal labor market, most unemployed. The mayor has a five-part program in this strategy, and one part is leveraging the power of the city's anchor institutions to create jobs and build wealth in low-income communities. One part is cooperative business development. So it's, at the federal level, we all know there's such terrible gridlock, you can't get anything to happen. where the invention and innovation is starting to happen is in cities all over the country. You mentioned Jackson. We've also worked in Jacksonville, Florida with the mayor there, out in Richmond, California. There's a lot of very exciting and very innovative and progressive work taking place at the city level in the country.
Right, and in the mayor's initiative, the Livable Claiborne Corridor study, it also, just to break down that 52% unemployed black males a little further, they did further, they collected further data and found that these people aren't, you know, a lot of folks say they're just lazy. These people don't work because they're just lazy. And what they found through really digging into this population is that no, most of these people, in fact, I think it was like it's in the 90th percentile of these folks are not just lazy. They're ready to work. They're willing to work. But they have so many strikes against them, a felony record or a criminal record or you know, or a poor history of employment or a student loan debt. Well, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why people are shut out of the workforce. So I really commend the work that, that the Livable Claiborne Corridor initiative has done. And I also, I've been following your work in terms of what other cities are doing to create community wealth building offices within city government in order to deliberately nurture cooperatives into being. I'm so glad that the city of New Orleans has opened their arms and are willing to embrace cooperatives and the ideology. What can the city do to really dig into that a little deeper and really help to, I know there's a pilot project going on now that Sally Stevens was instrumental in creating, and I have to send a shout out to her because she has been following the cooperative development movement for 20 to 30 years and is probably the one person in New Orleans that knows more about cooperatives than anybody I know. So there's a pilot project that she's put together. It's a culture cooperative, and they're under the Foundation for Louisiana. Some money was provided for her to be able to work with other people to actually get this thing going, which is great. But what other ways, what other things can we be doing, can the city be doing to sort of deliberately help these cooperatives and this ideology sort of, you know, come along and come to fruition?
Yeah, that's a... That's a great question because it's one thing to be kind of in favor of this shared ownership strategy, but then how do you put that together? Let me, before answering the question, let me sort of pose the possibility of what could happen at scale here. The most advanced cooperative business system in the world is in Spain, in a part of Spain called Mondragon, where the Basque people live. And beginning in the 1950s, they had just a terrible economic situation in the Basque country back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, much worse than the worst poverty in the United States. It was, it's interesting. I talked to an old Basque gentleman. I've made four trips there to Spain. And I asked him, what was it like in those days before you began this, what's called the Mondragon Cooperative Corporation, which I'll describe. And he said, and this is relevant here, he said, well, you know, in your country, you had that terrible storm, that Katrina. He said, in our country, in the Basque country, we had a Katrina every year for decades. That's what it was like here. And so they decided to really pull themselves up by their bootstraps because no one was going to come and rescue them. And what could they do? And they began, they created one small company with five workers in it, a small cooperative. If you fast forward now over a little over 50 years to where we are, Mondragon is last year and it's had 120 companies, all worker-owned, about 85,000 people working in it, the system. They turned over $20 billion U.S. in revenue. They're the seventh largest corporation in all of Spain. They have the third largest bank, and it's completely worker-owned. So that's the possibility if you stay with it. This is not a silver bullet strategy that if we do one thing tomorrow, thousands of jobs will result. We're really talking about system change within a community like New Orleans and what becomes the new normal for business practice, for economic development, for investment in the community. here in New Orleans, I think, there are economic development offices and strategies all over the country. A lot of this activity is what's often called smokestack chasing, where, we try to take a company from Cleveland and move it down here. People in Cleveland lose jobs. Temporarily, jobs are brought here. Then New Orleans, and then North Carolina, say, gives them a better deal. So one is to retool how we use public investment and subsidies and aim it at companies that are loyal to and committed to staying in the community. And certainly worker co-ops, because they're owned by the people who work in them, and the people who work in them live in the community, they're not going to exit New Orleans. They're going to be here for the long haul. So there's that. There's certainly a lot of, sort of technical assistance and infrastructure development that's needed. Fortunately, there's a great amount of knowledge all over the country. There's a group called the U.S. Federation of Worker Co-ops, for instance, which works with cities and people all over the country to help build these co-ops. In Cleveland, we created a new infrastructure, what we call a multi-stakeholder company, which is called the Evergreen Cooperative Corporation, which works with all the anchor institutions in the city to drive investment and purchasing locally. And then there needs to be public education. Most people don't know what a co-op is. They may have gone to a food co-op somewhere, but they don't really understand the experience. And so I think there's a great amount of just popular cooperative education. I know the school system here is dominated by charter schools. Those charter schools should be teaching young people that there are different ways to organize the economy and different approaches to work and business, and actually starting to train people to do these kinds of jobs, not just work for, large corporations and so forth. And then one thing the mayor is doing, and I'm sure he'll stay with it, is to bring the anchor institutions on board in these strategies, to have them see it's good for their businesses, their hospitals, their universities, to buy local, to keep money in the community, to invest in the community, because those institutions aren't going away. So, it's a very robust strategy that's needed to make this work. But, history shows it can work.
Right, right. And I'm glad you mentioned Mondragon, too, because one of the things that Sally Stevens and I keep mentioning to people whenever policymakers, decision makers, whenever we're speaking with them is, when the financial crisis happened in 2008, Spain was largely unaffected by that because they had control of their local economy. They were not dependent so much on international free trade and, all of this corporate reorganizing that goes on all over the world that doesn't necessarily benefit the people in the cities where they live. So it's great in terms of strengthening local economy and retaining money in the city and becoming and finding the money that we need within our own city in order to improve our city, to increase our general fund and so on.
That point, if I could just say about while a city like New Orleans or Cleveland faces enormous challenges of poverty and disinvestment and so forth, sometimes the mindset sets in, my God, we're just so poor. How are we ever going to handle these problems? And there's no money now coming from the feds because of the gridlock and all that. But the truth is, and I'm very familiar with Cleveland because I'm now living there. I moved there for the Evergreen Initiative. Even in a city like Cleveland, there's a huge number of assets and a great amount of financial wealth that's simply not harnessed to benefit the community. And two of the major hospital systems in Cleveland and one of the universities, together, we did a study. Together, every year, they purchase, year in, year out, over $3 billion of goods and services. But most of that money leaks out of the region. So there's three, if you can kind of get your head around it, there are $3 billion sitting there year after year that are churning through these institutions. So the strategy becomes, and it's the same one here in New Orleans, particularly with the hospitals where we're interviewing hospital leaders and so forth about this, the strategy becomes how much of that $3 billion or the several billion dollars here can we capture and place into the community? Not as charity, because, big hospitals, universities, they need to buy all kinds of goods and services. So we're not asking them to do something any different than simply focus on buying local. Get what you need here. There are plenty of small businesses that exist that can supply you. We can create new businesses like cooperatives that can do groundskeeping or laundry services or provide food. So, you know, there's a clear pathway for a strategy here. And one of the things I've been just very impressed with, the network of smaller businesses, particularly in the, you know, low-income neighborhoods, that simply need the opportunity to get in the game with these institutions. And if they do and win these contracts, they'll expand and they'll hire people. And the people they're going to hire are people like themselves who are from the community.
It seems like I was going to say no-brainer.
Almost.
Is there any way that people can interact with, get involved in meetings? Are there any events going on where folks can learn more about what's happening in New Orleans? And how can people learn more about the Democracy Collaborative and about you? Is there any contact information on the Internet or anywhere you would recommend people visit?
Yeah. To reach the Democracy Collaborative, we do a huge amount of research and publishing and videos and podcasts and social media and all these things. I have a great staff of younger people who actually know about all this, unlike me. I just get to read it and tap into it. We have a robust website called democracycollaborative.org, and all the young people tell me that's way too long a name, but there you go. So it's democracycollaborative.org, and you can, if you go there, you can learn all about these co-op strategies. You'll learn about Mondragon. You'll learn about community wealth building and so forth. Here in New Orleans, there are so many public discussions going on around this economic development strategy. I'm not quite sure, since I don't live here, kind of how to tap into that, but I know the New Orleans Business Alliance is very involved, and they're our partner in this work, and the mayor's office directly. And I know the mayor's office has posted the economic development strategy. There are different teams and task forces meeting on these things. So I think if you sincerely want to get involved in this, you definitely, if you apply yourself probably for 15 minutes on the web, you're going to be able, through NOLA, Business Alliance, or the city, to find ways to tap into this strategy.
Right. And, I mean, I go to the New Orleans Business Alliance board meetings. I'm always welcome there. I'm always welcome to make public comments in kind of informally as well, which is unusual for a board meeting. So I'm appreciative of that. And I know that Ashley Gardier is the person who's overseeing the Livable Clyburn Corridor Initiative, and she's the person that has put together these task groups. There's six of them that you mentioned. And she's also very open to hearing from the community. If anybody wanted to get in touch with her, her name is Ashley Gardier.
Yep.
If you call the city, I'm sure people would be willing to put folks in touch with her. But thank you. I think we're going to wrap up just because we're getting ready to play Democracy Now! At 9:00 a.m. as we do every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we'll read our events and so on. But thank you again so much for coming in. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and good luck with everything you're doing. And if there's anything we can help you with, please let us know.
Thanks for the invitation, and I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Great. Thank you.